Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Ike Live. Hope you're having a wonderful Friday. I know I am. As we always talk about Brian DeCarpenter, you know it's a good show when time's flying by. I just looked at our feed. We were like 2 hours and 24 minutes already. It feels like fucking 10 minutes.
Yes. Time.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, we're going to feel it in the morning.
The morning's a different story. But a measure of a good show is always that it's like hours and it feels like it's 5 minutes.
I've got them.
What do you got, Brian?
I've got them.
You've got them?
Yeah, they're here.
Okay.
All right. Let's not delay on that.
All right. Let's not delay. All right. So listen, Brian's always so good at surprise guests, and he's got some lined up right now. So joining us here on Ike Live.
I'm going to let you pick them out and name them as I pop them up on the screen.
All right. Join us now on Ike Live. We've got three mystery guests. It looks like I see a Seth Fighter.
Yeah.
What up, boys?
Seth! I see Carl.
Hey, gone, boys.
What's up?
Yo, this is wild.
And my eyes can't see the one below. It looks like a Brandon.
That's right.
Yeah.
What's up? Oh! Wow. Holy shit, I feel like I'm on Straycast. These are like three dynamite guests at one time.
Yeah. I figured I'd do like Pat does and just get everybody that's ever fished on the same show at once.
All right. Now, listen, I almost feel like intimidated right now because I got to tell you that right now on this screen, right now on this dumb podcast that we've been doing for 7 years, we honestly have four of the most influential young anglers in the world. So thank you guys for coming on the show.
Yeah, that panel is wild,
dude,
man.
Dude, crazy. True. Crazy.
Yeah.
I want to start with let me start with Carl. Carl, Oliver's here in studio.
Good day, mate.
Hi, mate.
I want to know, I know your ears were ringing because we talked about you a little bit this week already, but talk about how you guys influence each other. How has Oliver influenced you? How has Carl influenced you, Oliver?
You know what? We first met through Brandon when I was living in Texas and on a run with those big fish in Austin. And, man, just I only knew what I knew from him through the gram and some social stuff, right? I'm like, oh, Aussie dude, like, his story fascinated me. Like, it continues to fascinate everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, this dude is chasing his dream. Or you want to talk about those struggles we talked about earlier?
Yeah.
Like, dude, this dude left his country.
Oh, yeah.
To come chase, you know, fish that he'd never caught before.
Yeah.
And he's doing it at the highest level.
Yeah.
Like, that's aspirational shit.
Yeah.
And the dude he's just a dope man. I mean, I've seen his abilities firsthand with a rod in his hand and at the IHOP, you know, breakfast where, like, the server's giving him free OJ because he's got a stupid accent. like, yo, what the hell?
That's some shit.
That's not even fair.
The power of the accent.
All he's doing is talking.
Yeah. Carl, has Oliver influenced you in your fishing and the way you fish a big bait or the way you tournament fish or the way you have an outlook on tournaments?
Yeah, no doubt. You know, it's Oliver was probably him and Brandon, you know, but Brandon put me in touch with Oliver. But for me, you know, coming over here and doing all these crazy things, leaving my country, like, it's things that excite me, like, that give me a big rush of, like, this is crazy. That's kind of what excites me in life, is going after things that not everyone else can do or is doing or trying to do. And the big bait thing really excited me from every different aspect of it. And I could see what Oliver was doing, and I've been listening to this whole podcast. It's been awesome, and I've been into it the whole time because I know Oliver's story and been friends with him. And that big bait side of things just got me so ramped up. But Oliver hadn't talked about the tournament side of things too much, but I wanted to introduce that side of things into my tournament arsenal. I was like, how can I do what Oliver's doing and bring it into the tournament game, and also just watching what Oliver's doing, he was making fishing cool, just like what you guys had spoke about. And I haven't tried to do that because I was never the cool kid at school. I just had a
Phil, you get free orange juice for no reason. You're cool as shit.
I got a lot cooler when I got over here, and I just
had it didn't really juice. Work the same when I went over there, man.
He said, but yeah, Oliver's he's just been awesome, and I actually reached out to Oliver and asked him. I said, I don't want to. It's going to take me years and years to learn this. The Murray cod and the barramundi are the things in Australia that gave me that feeling of, like, when I was fishing for them, I got that twist in the guts that makes you, yeah, like, when you're winding your bait back, you're like, it feels like the first time you've ever been fishing, because they're so big and ferocious, and just the way they act. And the only way I could get that feeling in America was when I was tournament fishing, when I was competing, and like, or it was the final day. That's when I would get that feeling. And then when I went with Oliver and I fished that, I got that feeling back, because I was fishing a Hinkle trout or a 9-inch, 12-inch bait, and these giants were following it up and then eating it in front of me. And I got that feeling. So I not only then got the feeling of the tournament fishing and what I had moved here for, but then when the season had ended, I could fish these giant baits and try and catch the biggest bass or biggest fish, you know, a fish that I've dreamt about, you know, sort of my whole life. So Oliver was a huge inspiration for that. And then just that dream and that big bass dream, and when I would wear that hat, and that's, and a lot of it is where Fear My Heart came from, and a lot of that got inspired, and Oliver would wear that brand, and I would wear his stuff because I was dreaming, and it just all came together. And I just like to see someone that is doing something and going after something that is, you know, out there, and just seeing the way that he is never altered from, I don't know when I actually met Oliver, how long ago was it? It was before I met the Elites, but like, he's the same. He's the same. He's been going after the same thing. He's been chasing up and just continually pushing the limits one after the other and growing and not getting set back by those. You get the setbacks and you see the people, they come and go, and they come and go in this sport. I've been here for 10 years and I've seen hundreds, maybe thousands of people just come and go through this sport. And there's those certain few that just stay. And Oliver has stayed and stayed strong. And, you know, fishing needs him, and tournament fishing needs someone like Oliver, just like we need Ike and everything that he's done. I think Oliver is just going to be a great asset to tournament fishing. And when I heard, you know, we speak often, but Oliver's a friend that we don't speak that much, months and months, because we're busy getting after it. But when we connect, it's like we've never been apart. It's just like, what's up straight away. He knows he's welcome. I know I'm welcome anytime around him. We'd always try and fish together. That's the sort of friends that you want. And that's the sort of person Oliver is. And when I heard that he's finally going to actually get after it and go for the opens, I'm like, hell yeah, this is awesome. We need that.
Yes.
Cheers, mate.
That's awesome. And I got to tell you, just hearing you talk, Carl, it's great, because how two guys can be so different
from the other ends of the world.
Yeah, so different, but yet so the same. Yeah. It's a very, very amazing story. So thank you for that.
Yeah, and let me touch on that, man. So I got to show Carl just some basic fundamental things with a big glide bait. And I mean, obviously he's a talented angler in his own right. I mean, all his winnings and records are still standing, I believe, in Australia. He hasn't been there in like 10, 15 years or something crazy like that. And he's been able to take a little bit of that insight and validation and build on it in his own way and like utilize it at that highest level. Like, man, that's so dope.
It's cool to see that, that happen, that connection. Brandon, first of all, before we get into conversation, I do have to say congratulations. Engagement.
Thank
Tiffany,
you.
Official.
Woo!
That's awesome. Congrats.
Yeah. Official.
Congrats, guys.
About time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think.
Cheers to that.
Yeah.
Cheers to that. Cheers. Yeah.
So, Becky showed me the day that it happened, or when you guys finally posted it, and there were terrific pictures and everything. You guys looked amazing. And, you know, Beck's like, look, Brandon and Tiffany got engaged. I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. And then Beck goes, yeah, finally. But it was such a woman's response, you know. I'm like, yeah, cool. Yeah. And Beck's like, finally, you know. But I want to talk to you about the same thing. Like, you guys have obviously influenced each other. But I want to hit it from a different perspective, which is you guys have taken swim baits, which was always – and we mentioned this on BU a little bit – which was always this underground, shut up, don't talk about it.
Right.
And you guys have helped the world learn about them. Brandon, I want to start with you. Was it easy? Is it hard when you have to divulge that stuff? You do it in seminars. You design the bait from Storm. You explain it live on Bassmaster Live. Is it easy to give that away, or is that a hard thing to do because it's such a cool, like, culture, like a subculture?
It's both. It's awesome because you're sharing that experience. Yeah. Maybe I should start on the other side. It's hard because you're giving the info to a technique that is so deadly,
yeah,
in certain situations and has the ability to put fish in the boat that no other bait has the ability to do.
Right.
There are certain fish that will get to a certain either size or mentality that those fish just won't react to any other bait that they will a big swim bait.
Right.
You know, whether it be a Defiant or a Huddleston or a Rashi Glide, you know, there's certain fish that just won't react to normal baits. And the flip side of that is that all of the cool things that we've seen, whether it's by myself, Oliver by himself, or the cool things that we've seen together throwing big baits.
Yep.
Yeah.
You want to share that. You want to see other people experience that.
Yeah.
Because it's such a different style of fishing. And like I talked about how certain fish will react. Even 2-pounders will react differently to a big bait than they will a spinnerbait or a chatterbait. Like, I've never had a bass chase my crankbait up to a boat real nice and slow and then just run its head straight into my trolling motor. Like, that only happens with a big bait, right? Like, where they get so just tuned in that all of a sudden, you know, you'll see them. They're zeroed in on the bait and they're following it and they're following it and they have no idea you're there. They don't know it's a boat. It's just an object that's casting a shadow. And then all of a sudden it kind of clicks and they realize it's like they woke up from a bad dream. They're like, how in the hell did I just get here? And to see those things happen is what makes me want to share it. You know, and then like watching all of the things that Oliver does and puts out there to expand that category. And I think it started out there, but as his brand has evolved over time, it has become much more about just sharing the experience and the passion of fishing, right? Like getting out there and enjoying that journey and that experience.
Yeah.
And that all stems from like chasing one bass and then it evolves into like chasing the dream, which can be anything. It can be the experience, the journey, whatever it may be.
Yeah. I want to throw the same question to you, Oliver. Do you feel the same way?
I definitely want to touch on that because you want to talk about two different subcultures within fishing, trophy hunting and tournament angling. The most tight-lipped things through the 90s and 2000s. I mean, guys used to cover their decks at my local tournaments with towels so you couldn't see.
Shout out to Chris Alfonso.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
so there was this huge barrier in sharing that harder info against your competition, because even on the trophy side, like, other people want to catch that same fish. So you're battling for, you know, finite resources, whether that's time on that water in that spot for that opportunity, or potentially giving your competition a leg up.
Right.
Or at least an even leg.
Right.
I mean, that's not easy to ask of somebody. So we live now in a culture in fishing that info is expected. Versus like where I came from, like, yo, I'm not telling you nothing. So
yeah,
all you guys that digest all the info from those incredible anglers on the screen sitting in front of me through Bass University. Man, be thankful you guys live in this modern era of information. But I want to emphasize it matters who and where your information is coming from. And these guys
praise
the
Lord.
I want to be listening to.
Yes.
I'll add to that. I'll say yes. I agree.
So everybody give yourselves a round of applause. Yeah.
I want to jump in though and say something and a personal thank you, because I got to experience something and I haven't ever told this story about how you guys are influencing people. So I was boat captaining one of Vegas's tournaments this year, and in each tournament I have two kids that get on my boat. So Vegas was one, and I had this other young kid, Chris, who was like a little older in Vegas. He was like 11 years old. And dude showed up at Manasquan, where it was like a finesse bite, like you have to be throwing like a drop shot on 6 pound with only big baits.
Yes.
And he was and he was referencing Brandon and Oliver that day all day. And I'm in the boat. He didn't even care about me.
yeah.
But what the point is,
I'm telling you kids, put some respect on this man's name.
No, I don't care. No. The point is, Brandon, the point is, and Albert, I know it's hard to give that stuff up, and it's sometimes hard. I know. I've lived it too for 20 years. But thank you for doing it, because you're inspiring. Inspiring people. You're
it's crazy,
kids.
Man. And I really just feel like it's an evolution of us as people, right? A younger version of myself was a lot more selfish, a lot more unsure of my own abilities, and more focused on, you know, establishing that body of work to like validate myself.
Yeah.
It's not like that anymore. I've got to experience incredible things. And I've seen the power of just giving someone a little bit of glimpse and catching their first whatever, their biggest whatever, and like seeing that energy again, like brings me back.
Yeah.
And like, dude, that's the coolest thing in fishing. It's not me catching them anymore.
Yeah.
It's enabling other people to live their dreams.
It's great.
And like all these guys are doing that.
Yeah. It's a great feeling.
It really is.
It's a great feeling to pass it on.
Yeah.
It's a great feeling to pass it on.
You'd think I could be nice enough to give you that same feeling up in the Northeast and let you catch a bass in the last 4 days.
You feel me? Dude.
How many days is it going to take?
This is bad.
If you measured experiences that I've had with everybody on that panel and this man sitting here, like, that's probably... It's got a long way to go on the next one. Like, we got to close that gap.
I want to close the gap.
Yeah,
I know you guys, all you guys have caught him with Oliver. I want to do that too. We got to stay out of Jersey. We got to get over 38 degree water temp.
Real talk.
We got to be clean, not muddy water. Right, we got a lot of things to do. All right. Seth, I want to get to you, and this is, I saved the best for last, because this is really another thing that I think both you guys do so well, and you do it because it's who you are. Seth, I want to start with you. Dude, you are the angler who is the most real to me, to a lot of people. When I watched you fish on the Elites last year, it was fun, it was dynamic, it was entertaining. Why? Because you were you. Dude, you're a regular dude. Dude, you could have went to high school, me and Brian. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
And when people watch you for the first time, they feel like they know you. They feel like they're at the bar drinking with you. You know what I mean? Like, dude, that is so powerful.
And refreshing.
It's so powerful and refreshing. Was there ever a part, a time in your career, Seth, where you were like, oh, man, I got to fit in. I got to act more like I got to be the normal bass guy. I better cut my hair. I better not curse. Was there ever a time where you felt that pressure, or did you just say fuck it and you said I'm going to be who I'm going to be?
Oh.
No, absolutely. I don't know if I'd say felt the pressure. You know, my first year or two on tour.
Yeah.
Just kind of trying to be the quote unquote textbook pro bass fisherman, clean cut, banging darts all the time and not swearing and. And after I kind of hit, like, I don't know if you'd call it rock bottom, but to the point where I was, you know, a month away from thought I wasn't gonna be fishing anymore, and I just said screw it and had some success, which helped too. Kind of bring me out of that.
Yeah. Well, I got to say the same. Again, I want to make the comparison that the great thing, Alvarez, I've watched you from afar for years. It's like you never tried to – you know, you never tried to jump into somebody that you weren't. You never tried to be get to a different role.
I learned those lessons early in life.
Yeah.
Right? You can't fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Like, if you can't be yourself, like, that energy isn't sustainable.
Yeah.
I learned that early on. And honestly, someone like yourself made it a hell of a lot easier for someone like me and Seth to come along. Because, I mean, you were yourself. Right, you were the freaking, like, yo, who is this dude doing windmills on the front deck right now? And just screaming at that 1.5-pound giant. Like you were that dude, man. Yeah. And you were unconventional. And honestly, you influenced me for sure to be like, damn, if that dude can get away with doing that, like, maybe I got a shot.
Yeah. It's awesome, though.
Yeah, man. It's important that people realize that they need to be themselves for it to really work.
Yeah.
And if that person isn't good enough, maybe we got to work on ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? Become a better version to where, like, you got so much leverage, you can just drop F-bombs on a live podcast. I'm not there yet.
Yeah. Anytime you want.
Yeah.
Speaking of F-bombs, Seth, you fish with both of us now. You fish with Oliver, you fish with me. This is the question here. You ready?
Yeah.
Who drops more F-bombs, Seth Fighter or Mike Iaconelli?
Ooh.
Come on.
Man, that's pretty close, man. I was honestly pleasantly surprised by how many you've been dropping.
Thank you.
I was telling that to Clint.
Thank you.
Like, yo, man, I didn't really expect this. Like, we're still rolling, and this fool's dropping S-bombs and F-bombs. I'm like, dude, that's goals. Because, like I said, I don't have enough leverage to be able to be, like, unfiltered.
Yeah.
Right? But at the same time, like, I'm okay with the mental challenge that's been presented to me to be able to properly present myself, right, to get that leverage.
Yeah.
And, man, it's cool. It's refreshing. It gives me hope that, like, hopefully, like, I can be the truest form of myself at all times.
Yeah. It's good. It's good to be yourself. It's good to be yourself. And the great thing is when people see it, they know, right? When you're you, it's very believable, and it translates right to people. Like, there's no wall.
Yeah.
They see it.
This is me without the cussing. Like, that's it.
Yeah. This is an easier question to answer. Who smokes more heaters?
Oh, me or Seth man, Fighter? Come on. That's not even...
Heaters.
I'm the champ.
The llama.
Seth wins that one. All right. I want to throw it to you, and... I want you to go one by one on this panel, and I want you to go in reverse order. We're going to start with Seth. Oliver, give me one thing you learned from fishing with each of these three guys.
Just one?
One thing. Just give me one. Well, Brian the Carpenter made us run late, so we only got a little bit.
Oh, man.
We got time limits now?
No, I'm just messing with you.
It's crazy because, like, there's so much I've learned from all these guys, and they can be, like, real, like, on the inspirational level, like just grandiose, like deep stuff, right? Or something as simple as like a small tackle trick that has, like, changed my game this summer.
Yeah.
I got to fish with Seth on one of his home ponds that he grew up jacking fish out of milfoil, which he's known for.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm getting to watch this man at work like a maestro, man. And he's got on this ringed wide gap hook. And I'm like, yo, what is that? Because I've hated straight shank hooks my entire life. I just hated them. So when that became the thing for, like, flipping and punching heavy cover, I was like, damn, do I really got to do this? And then he showed me this offset wide gap ringed hook and explained to me, like, how he felt like, man, this is the real deal.
Yeah.
And that inspired me to spend the entire summer working on my right-handed reel, left-hand flip game, because I was that guy guilty of going right-hand to
making
left.
A switch.
Right. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I got to fish with one of the best dudes that's known for this specific, and not only that specific technique, but, like, that's his jam. Like, that inspired me to step my game up. So I spent all summer flipping grass in Minnesota and trying to get on that Seth Fighter level.
Yeah.
And but little things like that ringed hook.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank you, no more straight hooks.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Dude. Thanks,
that's
homie.
A good one. Yeah, Seth, thanks for that too. I actually, Seth and I talked
We were talking about that.
Oh, yeah. We talked about this years ago. I got onto that ring deal too. So I appreciate that too, Seth. That's a good one. Give me one for Brandon. I know Brandon's taught us all a lot, but give me one that sticks with you.
My goodness, man. That it's not a fluke to catch and win with the big bait at the highest level.
In a tournament.
Yep. In a tournament.
In a tournament.
Yeah. And it's not because it's the power of the bait. It's the power of the men yielding the bait.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Dude, it's inspirational, man. It's dope as hell.
Yeah.
He's the poster boy.
Yeah.
Living the dream. Yeah. Like, he's living the dream. He's been living the dream, and he's worked his way from the bottom, and I've got to spend, you know, a couple nights, like, at his new pad with his crazy drive-through garage, and, you know, the guest room's got, like, five freaking blue trophies, like, staring at me. And like, that's cool. I'm glad I could fit my bags in here. Yo, man, like, the dude's decorated.
Yeah. It's cool to see that big bait and work in tournaments.
For sure.
And I've seen Brandon do it. I've seen Carl do it. I've seen Carl catch him on Champlain, catching giants with, like, it's so
right.
cool to see it in a tournament scenario.
I remember
scenario.
Talking to him, like, during that, like, yo, dude, this is cool. Yeah. It's like, I've had that conversation with Brandon, too. Like, I tried to strip him a bait for a Gunnersville event, and because, you know, it was Gunnersville, I couldn't get it to him even though I tried to overnight him.
Yeah.
Like, yo, like, that energy is real, man.
Yeah.
Those opportunities are there, and these guys have become so good that they recognize those opportunities and execute them.
Yeah.
That's a difference.
Yeah.
You know, when someone like Pete says, like, I don't think this West Coast philosophy and mentality transfers, it's not that, man. It's the wrong guys attempting to make that transfer
right.
and not making the right decisions.
Yeah.
These guys have gotten so good at making decisions, it shows in their body of work.
Yeah. Yeah. Give us one thing that you learned from Carl, and you can't say have a sexy Australian accent to get free orange juice. Which I might use that, though, the next time I'm at a restaurant or a diner.
I mean, it's... Like I said, all three of these guys, and yourself included, have inspired me in so many ways, right? We could talk about tackle tips. We could talk about the aspirational, like, leaving the country thing. Like, he's taught me that it can pay off big to dream big.
Yeah.
This dude said, F it, and just went for it, man. And on, like, a tackle side of things, like, he showed me that I need to get more comfortable in fishing heavy braid to a short floral leader. Because of his experiences with some of his, you know, multi-species stuff with the barramundi,
heavy cover,
and the cod, and just big fish, bigger baits, big, just big everything.
Big Australian women.
Big opportunity, like big failure opportunity points, like in the tackle. And that was something I was uncomfortable with until I went down under and did musky fishing here. And I'm like, well, man, Carl's got this crazy FG knot. Finally made myself learn how to tie it after he showed me like 18 times.
Yeah.
And have added that to my largemouth bass fishing game.
Yeah.
Because I see scenarios where, like, that applies.
Yeah.
And that's an advantage.
That's awesome. Yeah.
The beautiful thing about fishing is the learning never stops.
Yeah.
And especially when you're surrounded by, like, incredible anglers. Like, I want to know everything these dudes are doing.
I know.
Man.
I
so
do
thank
too.
You guys for sharing, like your lives with me, man. This is crazy.
This is crazy.
I'm just a kid that grew up fishing pudding stone, and I got all you dudes talking. At the same time, this is cool.
This is crazy. All right, I got to tell you this. Guys, I want to go one by one, start with Carl, go to Brandon, go to Seth. This is a big year for Oliver, right? This is a big transition. I'm excited for him to sit in here, but I want to hear it from you guys, three of the best active anglers right now. Carl, one piece of advice for Oliver's fishing, for Oliver fishing opens.
Can we have all three of them do it in an Australian accent too?
No, I don't, let's just regular normal accent.
So Carl has to do an American accent?
No, Carl, regular.
All right,
your regular voice. Carl, give Oliver one piece of advice going into the full nine opens in 2021.
Oh, so I was thinking about that when he was talking about it, but he's already got it. You know, not being afraid of that failure. That's when he said that, I was like, he's going to be good, because, just not being afraid to fail and taking those failures on the chin and going after the next one. I think, putting it behind you and moving to the next one, you got nine, just I talked to Brian Robinson this last year, the which is crazy to me because of, you know, who he is. And he said he never let a bad game affect the next week's game. And that was huge to me. And it struck with me because that's sort of the way that I think. But my bad ones, they eat at me, and I just try and get over them as quick as I can. And so those bad ones, there's anglers this year and there's people that fish the opens, and after a couple of them bad ones, they quit. And I thought, man, I never did that in my whole 6 years of trying to make the elites. Like, I'd be in a position where I wasn't going to make the elites, but I'd still fish the last one because I'm like, I'm going to make the classic and win it.
Yeah.
And so I think just don't let those failures affect your next one.
Yeah. That's
appreciate you, bro.
That's a good one. Great lesson for everybody. Brandon, give Oliver a good one for 2021 fishing the opens. This is a big deal. This is a big deal for him. Give him a piece of advice.
It is. I know that he's been like flirting with the idea of this for a while. So I'm glad that you're actually stepping up, doing it. It's about time. I think there'll be a lot of people that are surprised. And the cool thing is that you already have such an unconventional approach to the sport that use that to your advantage. You know, you're already really good at not fishing conventionally. And so don't get caught up in what should be happening at a body of water, because the one thing that holds true is that there will always be change in fishing. And when you look at the schedule and you say, oh, Oneida is whatever it is, I think it's the fourth week of July. No matter what anybody says, nobody has ever fished the third or fourth week of July in 2021. So nobody actually knows what's going to be happening at that time.
Wow.
And you just, I mean, as cliche as it is, you have to fish the conditions and fish it in the way that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Use the knowledge that you have in breaking down bodies of water and the way that fish move. And they're going to be where you find them. You know, as simple as that sounds, I say that like somewhat jokingly, they're going to be where you find them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you think about it and you tell yourself that, it allows your mind to be open to those unconventional methods and not say like, oh, I have to go do this or I have to go do that. It allows you to say, okay, the fish didn't grow legs and hop out of this body of water. I just either A, have to figure out where they're at, or B, figure out how to catch them. And that's pretty much how I have approached my tournament fishing. And that it crosses over into the big bait side of it.
Yep.
And use that where you can, and there'll be certain bodies of water and certain opportunities that open up, and you'll see those opportunities where those big baits apply. And then there'll be other times that it just doesn't apply. That's the biggest difference in chasing one bass versus fishing a tournament and trying to put five. You don't need five. Your three or four just need to weigh more than the other guy's five. But you just have to know when to pick it up and when to put it down.
Yeah,
that's the biggest thing.
Appreciate you, bro.
Good advice. Super advice. Yeah. Actually, I'm taking some of that,
I'm telling you, like, everybody listening should be taking this down.
Yeah, I'm taking
some of
that.
Damn right.
Seth Fighter, I want to put a big exclamation point on this. This is a big year for Oliver Fishing. 9. Big variation in bodies of water. From the north to the south to the in-between. You've been there. You've done it. Give Oliver a piece of advice for his 21 campaign.
Yeah. Paul and Nick touched on a lot of really good stuff, but I just say don't be afraid to scrap practice. Like, you could have the best or the worst practice you've had in your whole life. You're there. You think you got them really dialed. Those end up being some of my worst tournaments if I just get hard-headed and stay to what happened 2-3 days ago, whatever the conditions were, whatever. It does not take long to catch them. I mean, if you've been practicing 2-3 days, you think you're dialed, you got a super good pattern. Every time in practice you do it, you get a bite or whatever, and then, tournament rolls around and that all falls apart. Don't be afraid to just go fishing again and, do whatever you think is right. And when you think something's not working and you get an idea in your back of your head, like, go do it. Don't sit there dragging a jig on rocky points for 3 hours thinking about, oh, I should go throw a spinner bait in the back of pockets and just keep, you know what I mean? Like, when that thought crosses your brain, lift your trolling motor up and go do it.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Trust that voice.
Yeah, man.
It's a hard thing to do sometimes.
Right.
It's hard, It's hard to break.
Especially if you have a good practice.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
If you look twice or you think twice, go do it.
Yeah.
Good practices can be the worst. Good practices are rough.
Yeah.
They either really, really pay off or they're the total other end. And
man, I've had that same experience at all those lower levels.
Yeah.
The best performances are always just going in blind, fishing the conditions in the moment.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Appreciate you guys, man. Seriously, I'm humbled to be able to call you guys friends, and it's still wild for me. This is sick.
Yeah. Dude, Brian DeCarpenter, I can't thank you enough for setting up this amazing surprise guest spot.
You can.
I'm in shock.
Stand up.
Oh.
Applaud.
Shout out to Brian DeCarpenter,
man. Shout out to Brian DeCarpenter.
And these guys here on the Zoom for graciously doing this.
Yeah.
I appreciate all three
of them. Yeah, all three of you guys. Thank you for coming on
the
show.
Are awesome.
Man,
amazing
huge
advice,
inspiration there to so many people. And couldn't think of three better guys to have on with Oliver today talking about 21. So appreciate you guys.
Yeah. Thanks, boys.
Yeah. Thanks, boys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
See you on the water.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks,
good
man.
Luck this
Carl
year, guys.
Carl, Brandon, and Seth, everybody.
Good to see you, boys.
Dude. Wow.
We're calling you the bad
bro, you're good.
Now, dude, I always talk smack. I say he's not a good producer. He's only a good carpenter.
We've got to always rib each other, right?
Yeah. He's actually pretty good. I'm talking smack. He's actually really good.
For show.
Dude, that was awesome.
Carl's hanging out. Carl, you hanging out?
I hope Carl does hang out.
I'm just not leaving.
You ain't got to go.
Yeah, it's Friday night. There's COVID's around.
Everybody's married.
And everybody's got COVID. So you ain't doing nothing anyway. You might as well hang out with us and have a beer. It doesn't matter.
It's up to you.
Yeah, you can hang
out. No pressure, y'all.
No pressure.
Now, I want to be able to chime in on any shenanigans that shake down in the next who knows how long you guys will be on.
Yeah. Brandon and all just.
I mean, I was already disappointed that Oliver didn't talk about, like, all the trout fishing skills that I taught him when he was up
there. Oh! Yeah. Whoa! Yeah. How about what? I didn't know any of
this. Coeur d'Alene River, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
The heck of a bachelor.
And he was actually here for Carl's wedding.
A terrifying blizzard as I'm swaying like through the ice as a stupid California kid that doesn't know if I can put my four-wheel drive
risking
on while
your
I'm
life
driving
to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a wild weekend, man. That was a fun bachelor party.
That's awesome.
That was the wedding.
That
was crazy.
Crazy. Crazy, crazy. Yeah. Thank you guys, man. And also I don't want to not emphasize how important everybody that's ever supported myself or anybody that's ever supported you guys. I mean, you guys are instrumental in leveraging me to be in this position. So thank you to everybody that's ever supported Big Bass Dreams and myself in any way and your fans too, man.
Yeah.
The fans are everything.
Yeah. Well, I said it. I do want to reiterate it. Dude, you guys, including Seth who hopped off, dude, you are the guys that are inspiring the next generation of hardcore anglers, tournament anglers, young guys. I see it every time I see it, see kids walking around talking about you guys. That means a lot. So thank you guys. So good, sport needs it. The sport needs it. That's how it grows.
Yeah. That's what I said, but I was saying before, like, to see Oliver going to the tournament side of things is huge. I feel like the tournaments, like, there's certain people that you can see, they have that thing, they have the personality and they have the drive and then the passion for the real, true, reason why they got into fishing from a kid, and they got that. Like when Ike tells a fishing story when he was a kid, I can say the exact same words of what happened to me at that age. Yeah. And then when Oliver does it, he's telling my story. And then when Brandon does it, he almost tells my story. Like, it's almost exactly the same, and it's cool.
I've been loving the throwback photos. Like
yeah.
That's so dope, yeah. Man. And, like, seeing everyone's all of got our terrible haircuts.
And I feel like tournament fishing needs someone like Oliver. So, like, when you're going into it, you know, I just feel like tournament fishing needs that personality, that person, that passion that's going into it. And Oliver's going to throw that. He's going to throw that wrench into tournament fishing what we need in a good way. Yeah. In a great way. And so I think it's really cool. And he's been talking about it for years and we've been telling him to do it, but
timing, man.
Glad to see actually going to go in.
Yeah. I think it's good timing too, because now that all the brands have a live scope type of technology, all those fish are going to get killed like instantly. So having someone doing something different is good, you know? The fish have no chance, you know?
I got that secret make 'em bite button on.
That's right, make 'em bite button. Why have you guys here? I might as well take advantage, Brian Carpenter, to ask Brandon and Carl a couple things here. Big announcement today, of course, Bassmaster Classic being moved till June. I personally think it was a good move, but I would like to hear from you guys. Brandon, I'm going to start with you. Are you happy, sad, disappointed, indifferent to it? What do you think?
I mean, for me, I would go to the indifferent part. But I think that it's nothing but good, in a sense that when Bass makes a decision, it's made on the basis of how is it going to benefit the most people, whether it be the fans, the sponsors, the anglers, the city itself, all of that comes into play. And with all of the craziness that's still going on in the world, I don't know why when everyone thought that, like, when January 1st hit, that all craziness in the world was just going to end. I don't know why everyone thought, like, oh, 2020's done. Yep, we're done with all the crazies. Like, no, they're still here. And so I think that everything we're seeing now, just there's still so much unknown.
Yeah.
That switching it to June buys them more time.
Yeah.
It's easy for us. I shouldn't say easy. It's easier for us to have an elite event because it's a much more controlled environment. As much as we love to have fans there,
yeah,
it's not as required.
Yeah.
But for me to go fish a classic, I need there to be fans there.
Yeah.
You've won one.
Yeah.
For me, like, if I have the opportunity to win a classic, I want that stadium to be as packed as physically possible.
Yeah.
And so if moving it to June allows us to have every single fan there possible, then that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
Because that moment may only happen one time in your life. It may happen multiple times, but it's still the first one. And, like, I feed off of the energy of other people.
Yeah.
And it's similar to, like, the analogy of, you know, does a tree make a sound in the woods when it falls if there's nobody around?
Yeah.
Like, when you win, does it mean as much if there's nobody there watching?
Right.
Right. And I think we're so, just as human beings, we're so wired to be social creatures that when you eliminate fans out of our sport,
yeah,
it takes away from the one thing that is so special in what we do.
Yeah.
And
I couldn't agree
with that. Or the one thing that allows it to be a sport.
Yeah.
And so for me to win, to move it to June, I think is a good thing because of that, because of the opportunities that it allows.
Great.
Would it be better fishing in March? Probably. But guess what? Somebody's still going to win, and it's going to play out exactly how it's supposed to.
Yeah. I agree. I couldn't agree with you more about the fan portion of it. It's, you know, yeah. I didn't get to fish as much as you guys did last year with the elites, but that fan interaction is for me, it's important. And it felt missing, you know, like MLF didn't have a whole lot of fans anyway, right? So that portion was missing for me a lot. Carl, I want to throw it to you. How did the rest of the season go? Bass continued their season. They did a great job of continuing on even during COVID in 20. But did it feel strange or awkward not having a marshal in the boat every derby, not having the fans there, the big crowds there? How did you handle that?
Yeah, I just sort of took each thing as it comes. You know, I'm coming from Australia and trying to make it here. I'm used to setbacks and brick walls and all the things thrown at you that can possibly come. But this definitely, as bad as COVID has been and how, you know, difficult it is for so many people, like I think it woke a lot of people up.
Yeah.
And including me, I'm so grateful all the time. I try and be so grateful for every little thing. But like now, I'm just, if we get to fish, if there's a tournament, like I'm so grateful. Like it's not like the little things don't affect you near as much, you know, and now you're way more willing to adjust and not jump on things because you know there's way worse things happening. People are under more pressure and stress and difficulty than you. And if for our sport to continue and what Bassmaster and the anglers did to keep Bassmaster running, you know, with the thing with MLF coming in and Bassmaster almost went away. And when I was coming back to fish the elites, like everyone was telling me I was crazy, like Bassmaster would be gone. And that was only a year ago. And so now that it's building and come, I can't help but just feel like grateful for whatever's happening. And I'm just trying to roll with the punches basically. But for me, everything has always had to be worth the sacrifices. I don't get to see my family, my friends. I don't get to go home to Australia. I don't get to just drive around and see the people that I spent most of my life with. So I'm always striving to make sure that I'm like pushing the limits and going as far as I can and never slacking. And my dream and what got me here and what drove me through all the brick walls is my family and Australian fans in the stadium of a Bassmaster Classic waving like the Australian flag and Aussie, Aussie, Aussie and all that. And I'm driving in. That has pushed me through 10 years of like sheer hell.
Yeah.
Just that one image.
Yeah.
And I can think of that and I can cry. I can think of that. I can get chills up my spine. I can think of that. And it happens like every day, every week. I just get a glimpse of that and I get goosebumps. And I just keep pushing forward, and that has always been my drive. So Bassmaster continuing to think of fans all the time, to me, is number one, because I'm not here without the fans. I'm not here without that stadium packed. I'm not here without seeing those images of you winning, you screaming, never give up. And all of those classics that I got to watch about in my era is what pushed me through all of that. And without those crowds and stuff, I'm not doing it. So
yeah,
Bassmaster pushing it back, thinking of the fans and trying to get them back in the stage and in the stadium. For me, I'm like, I want them to keep doing that because that's what drives me more than anything.
Yeah, they're powerful. Fans are powerful for sure. It definitely can bring you to a different level. I want to chime in with Pete Glusick real quick and get his perspective. He's fished the tour longer than any of us. Pete, is it long overdue that Bass goes back to summertime tournaments? I know that was a thing for us for a long time, having a tournament in the summer or the end of the season. I know this one's kind of by default, but is it a good thing? Should Bass go back to summertime or fall tournaments?
Classics?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I didn't expect you to ask me that question. I love the summer classics, all right? They were amazing. They were well attended. the reason that they moved them to the early season is because they got more people, right? They got more fans. And I see that, but I don't know. I don't know about, I can't really respond to that, but I do love that they moved it to June. I do love that. I think it's an amazing thing. I think the whole country has been under a lockdown, and you know, even though we get out, we get to go out and fish, I think moving it to a place where possibly, you know, COVID and all this stuff is going to let us gather. I think you got a bunch of people that are going to swarm. I think potentially this could be the biggest attended classic in the history of classics.
Yeah.
I agree.
And let me even go further than that. And I was thinking about this today. We fished all day, brutal cold. We caught a couple today, believe it or not. It was
some
nice.
Longer than others.
But I was cold. I was cold. I was super cold. My hands were cold. My feet were cold. I was cold to the bone. I got back. I put my short swim trunks I have. I mean they are shorter than the Tommy Biffle shorts. They're short.
Cock.
I put those shorts on. No underwear, right? Just the shorts. Oh. And I got in my hot tub by myself. I poured a little bit of tin cup on the rocks. Poured it to the top, nice, smooth, mellow rye, just gone down smooth. And I got in that hot tub, and I started thinking about this very thing. And I thought, when things get better, dude, when things get better, when this vaccine gets out and things get back to normal, Pete, the first thing I'm doing is I'm going to the club and I'm dancing. I'm dancing, baby. I don't care what song's on. I don't care if it's house, hip hop.
We're getting windmill tonight.
Dude,
I might do a windmill tonight, man.
But I mean, I think you're right, Pete. I think the whole world is, when things get back to it, it's going to be a big surge. And I hope it happens in conjunction with some of these bigger events like the Classic. I think it'll be great. Yeah. It'll be great for the sport.
We've all been given some perspective.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Taken away from us.
Yeah. When things get back to normal, it's going to be...
appreciate it all.
It's going to be a pot A.
Yeah. I'm in.
I think there's a competitive aspect to it, too, because I thought about this when they moved it and had people start asking, and I got to thinking about it. So there may be some people watching that don't understand exactly what happened, but they took Pickwick in Alabama, which was our June event, and they just flip-flopped the dates with the Classic.
Yeah.
So they took Pickwick, moved it to March, took the Classic in March, moved it to June. From a competitive standpoint, that's way better for a lot of us that don't know Pickwick like the back of our hand.
Yeah.
Right? Because in June, odds are there's going to be offshore fish.
Right.
Guys are going to have their own little like sneaky squirrel honey holes, you know, off the wall stuff.
Good
and then there's going to be giant community holes.
Yeah.
You move that to March, kind of anybody's game, switches things up a little bit. And then you look at the Classic in June, everybody's been prepping for it. Everyone went there and pre-practiced before January 1st, thinking it was going to be an early in the year tournament, you know, pre-spawn, spawn if it's warm. And now you throw this and it levels the playing field.
Yeah.
In the fact that like anything could happen. And I thought about that a lot. I'm like, man, it really on both ends, not many guys fishing the Classic have ever fished Ray Roberts in June, probably.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of tournament info when you look at it. Like I spent a lot of time scouring across the internet, and there's a lot more stuff in February, March, April than there is in June, July, August. And the same with Pickwick, right? I mean, granted, we don't have to go. Yeah, like, I mean, the only thing that I hate about Pickwick in March is that I really don't want to go sit, like, at the school bus stop with everybody below the dam. But, I mean, I think it opens up the playing field a lot more.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a great I never thought about
it. That's great insight.
Yeah. Real quick, I got a question for both of you guys, Brandon and Carl. I'm eyeballing the Ike Live social feeds real quick while you were talking.
Yeah.
And Ed Sekula wants to know, guys, any chance you guys will do the baby pattern coming up in 2021? Now, you've heard of that. You've heard of guys getting on the baby pattern where their wives or girlfriends or fiancés get pregnant, and they go on these fucking tears where they win like 20 in a row. Yeah. So Ed's question is, any chance you guys are going on a baby pattern in 21?
Savage.
Carl, start with you.
Go ahead, Carl.
Carl.
Go ahead, Carl.
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 What did you do, Carl?
It's been spoken about, but I'm on like an upward trend, so that got put on the back burner. Like no baby pattern right now.
Wow.
You see me? If I bomb the first couple, like by the end of a couple, there might be another little Jockumson running around.
All right, there you have it. Good answer, Brandon. Come on, you gotta look. This is like live show. You can't lie. You got a baby pattern coming?
I mean, after 9.5 years together, like everyone's like, oh, when are you guys gonna get married? I'm like, I'd go down to the courthouse, but you know, we're looking at like potentially June. You know, so that if I can squeak out, you know, a couple wins early on in the year, then I feel like the rest of the year should just be a breeze. You know, that Northern Open swing comes around. Oliver, watch out.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, for us, it's like we'll get married and then we'll probably start trying to create little Polynix running around.
Just squeak out a couple other wins.
And we'll drag them around on tour around the road and see what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, if Oliver's going to start fishing tournaments, somebody's got to keep him in line, and that's most likely going to be my kids. So we got to start creating
fair.
Some.
Do you have it?
That's fair.
Do you have it? You heard it first on Ike Live, everybody. Yeah. Thank you, Ed Sekula, for that wonderful question. I do want to throw this out here real quick, too. And, Brandon, I want to tell you this. This is a vote of confidence from me, and I think you're going to do it. I still have a title. I'm still riding it out for a little bit. I'm the only guy to have won the Bass Federation National. I've won the Bassmaster Classic and Angler of the Year. I think you're going to take that eventually, and I'm excited. It's not fun being on the pedestal as the only guy.
It's a lot.
I think you're going to do it. Before your career is done, you're going to do that. So I can't wait for you to do it. It's going to be awesome.
Cheers to that.
It's actually a driving motivation for me.
Yes.
I've got to win a classic and an open. And opens, they're not getting any easier to win. I promise you that.
No, they're tough.
Yeah, we're coming.
It is tough. And so, I mean, it's something that so few guys, well, you're the only guy that's done it. And it's funny because I use that as like a trivia question all the time. Like, who's the one guy to win all that stuff? And it's amazing how many people don't realize that you've either won one or the other, right? Like the Federation or something, because it was, you know, that was a while ago, 99, right?
Yeah.
That's when you won Red River.
Long time ago. Yeah. Any chance you'll add?
You won on the Red River, right?
It was the Red River. Yep. It was on the Red. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. We both have that on the Red River, which
we
is
do.
Cool.
Wow.
We have That's a lot of similarities cool. in our story. You don't have webbed toes, do you?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
No. Prove it.
I have webbed toes. Now, if you had webbed toes, then the story would have got really weird.
Let's see them, Brandon. Put them on the glass.
But I wanted to add to that question. If you do, right? If you do, let's say you win a classic in a year or two or three, and you have those three, any chance you would go for number four and try to go back to MLF and get that MLF Redbreast Cup? The Redbreast?
No. No.
Redbreast?
No Redbreast?
No, not. There would have to be a lot of changes for that to happen.
All right. I don't know. I just thought
it would have to be like an open invite, something. I don't know.
I just wanted to say the word breast. That's the only reason I even asked that question.
Yeah. Well done.
You know what I mean? I just felt like
executed
I wanted
to
say breast. You know, Riz, I need to go to you real quick. I know we're over, but I know you've been monitoring IMs for a while now, and shit,
I'm honored.
We've had like 10 shows already here. So
by the way, I was just communicating with Rich. He was telling me there's a whole another show going on the message board.
There's a whole other show.
That's
awesome.
Yeah, there's a whole other show.
Well,
going
Riz,
on.
I know this is hard, but let's give us two or three. Pick those two or three. Give us a couple good questions for the panel here.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna go with the question directly to Oliver because my hands are tied here, peer mediating between some folks on the message board here, battling it out. the casual bass guy on YouTube wants to know, Oliver, have you ever considered making your own swim bait?
Oh man, that's really hard. Beyond my ability, but I hope to have contributions to bring some ideas to fruition. But like, I don't have the artistic capability to create a bait. I might have some concepts that I think I can help bring to life.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely, I would love to be a part of all of that because I've become my own angler with my own style. I want things that I want.
Yeah.
To help me try to beat all of these dudes.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I need all the help I can get, and you know, hopefully I'll get more opportunities to do that.
Yeah. Good question. What else you got, Riz?
I got The Real Journey on YouTube also wants to know, tell us a little bit about the story behind your PB.
Oh man, what do you want to know that I haven't just beat to death?
I heard Howard and Pete for asking.
Yeah, Howard and Pete already.
Yeah, I've done the work, man. I've documented it pretty well. I don't know what else to add to that, honestly.
I do have a comment here from on the message board that somebody sent me, Wawa Hoagie Lady, and I don't know the backstory here, so this makes us just to give you guys an idea. Who are you trying to impress here? I'm a 50-year-old hoagie maker at Wawa. So that's what's going on our message board, folks.
Oh, okay.
You?
fun fact, I caught my PB not with Oliver in the boat, but on a trip that was inspired by Oliver that I went down to Lake Austin to fish with Oliver on.
Yeah.
Is that true?
And within the first 45 minutes of being there, I caught a 9-pounder on a Roman made mother.
Yeah.
I drove 6 hours and then 45 minutes into it, I caught a 9-pounder on a mother.
Wow.
We had dual big fish.
The next day I caught a 12-4.
And a 12-4? Oh.
Yeah. That was a magical.
Oh, yeah. The next day.
For sure.
A 12-4?
Yeah. Biggest bass I've seen with my own eyes and held in Texas.
And
12-4 doesn't really do it justice because, like, this system at the time was kind of on a downswing.
Yeah.
The dynamics of the fishery changed, so those fish weren't, like big, fat Florida fish anymore. They were just, like, literally shells of their former selves. But he caught an absolute monster. The head on this thing was big. The frame was big. Dude, if she had the weight on her, like, she would have been, like, a super special fish. But she was, like, I mean, 12-4. And, That was magic, man. That was dope. Well done, bro.
Oof.
It's a giant. So cool. Me and Oliver both caught two that were like almost 9 pounds on the same day. That was so cool.
Yeah, it was rad. That was the first time we fished together.
That's sick.
Just a little bit cooler than this week.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
wait a minute.
Just a little.
What
just
are you talking about? We
just
were
a smidge.
But, you can't even compare that to snagging gizzard shad in the asshole.
That's true.
Yeah. Dude, how many gizzard shad did you catch with
these guys? We caught like five or six gizzard shad.
He caught five or six. I caught I caught one of them.
And they were all snagged in the asshole.
Four days
of fishing. So
two anglers per day. Say what? What, about 16 man hours per day times four, 32, 64 man hours of bass fishing. You guys didn't catch 9 pounds of bass.
No, that's not true. That's not true.
I have a question.
No, that's
12?
I have a question for Oliver. 12-4
beats our 64 hours over the last 4 days.
We had more than 12 pounds over 4 days. Delaware River, we had four that weighed 8 pounds.
What do you got, Brandon?
4-pounder today. That's 12 pounds.
Oliver, how many people, like through your training sessions and all of that, how many people have caught their PB with you?
That's a good question.
Man, honestly, too many.
Whether it was a training session or just guys fishing for fun.
Right. A lot of people. A lot of people.
That's cool.
I want to say, I mean, just friends and people with me and to where I felt like I had an influence on that. Like, definitely over 100. Like, yeah. A lot of people.
Wow. That's crazy.
That's very cool.
And, wow. And you know, it's wild to me to be able to help everybody live that dream.
Yeah.
It's cool, man. It's cool to accomplish, like, things of that nature.
It's very cool. Carl, real quick, weigh in. What's your PB? I don't know the answer to this one.
I was going to weigh in on it because my PB came on Brandon's glide bait that he designed.
Yeah, look at it. It's all coming full circle here.
I know, and it was like a prototype, you know. So I had one of the original prototypes that he had designed. It wasn't out on the market. And in 2018, that's when I went on that tear with the glide bait, and I was like leading Gunnersville Championship, and I boat flipped though back to back, 5.5, 6.5 at Champlain. I almost won the Bassmaster Open Championship on Table Rock, made the big comeback with the glide, lost a 6.5. That was all on Brandon's. And then that next year in March, we'd set the camper up on Chickamauga, and we were sort of living here in the camper. And I was fishing, you know, every day, and I fished all day, daylight till dark. And then Kayla came out for like the last sort of 5 hours, and I hadn't had a bite all day. And then I caught a 10-10 with about an hour to go of light. And wow. That's still my PB. I've caught a 10, two 10-2s, and then I caught that 10-10 on the glide. But that's definitely my, that's my fish.
That's sick.
What the hell, dude?
That's disgusting. We need to move out of the state.
I know, dude.
Man, word on the street is that it's a slight possibility you guys can get it down here in the state.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I know a place.
Like February, yeah. March, when it warms up a little, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it needs to warm up.
All right, I want to start a little fight here real quick. You ready? Swim bait. I'm talking about swim bait treble hooks. Hard swim bait treble hooks. Quad or try?
It's funny. We've all had this conversation.
Quads or tries? Brandon?
It's not even a fight.
It's supposed to be a fight. Come on.
Nah,
it's not, because we're all going to agree. How do you fight when you agree?
Oliver, do you agree with this?
I don't know anymore.
What? Wait a minute.
Are you treble?
I might be back to the treble.
Oliver's
do explain.
But it's all situational.
Do explain.
It's all situational.
I feel somewhat offended. Like he changed on us, Carl, and he hasn't even like sent a text or nothing.
I know, I gotta give myself a little advantage. He's just like, hey, you check out these books, dude. There's 4 points.
how long have you known your fish in the opens, and how long have you had this info?
Man.
This is brutal.
I'm kind of in between, because I just see it's a situational thing for me now.
Yeah.
And I've experimented and gone through the process of elimination, or tried to, right? And try to be as scientific as I can with my theories and hypotheses and the results that I'm observing. And I'm at a point now where, like, early, those quads were the deal.
Yeah.
Right? And those guys were with me a lot of times. I was putting them on 11-inch baits and, you know, undersized hooks at 1/0, because that's where they maxed out at. But, man, it might be more to do with how aggressive those fish were and how excited they were to see the baits I was throwing them at the time.
Right.
And then as those fish got more conditioned and acted more like fish in California, where they're coming up with, like, exploratory bites.
Yeah.
Not just full-on just murder.
Headbutts, yeah.
I felt like my results are going the other way a little bit.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what do I know?
Do you think that's because of the size of hook? Like, because there was only a 1/0, or is it actually the design of 3 points versus 4?
And now, and remember, this is only based off of my own experiences and opinions, right? That just doesn't mean anything really.
Yeah, but it's valid.
Thanks, man.
You have a good track record, so it's valid.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the hook shape and the point shape and the way they curve inward. The fact that now you have a fourth point to potentially distribute pressure to where you're not getting full penetration if they're getting like multiple points. Right? Penetration is an important thing. Like, you want to penetrate past the barb and into the bend of the hook. I mean, that's what you're looking for, and I feel like sometimes, because like the same way, like laying on a bed of needles distributes those pressure points, you might not be getting full penetration.
Right.
And I have those fish shake off.
Hmm.
I've had it happen, but I've also had incredible successes, just like the boys have too.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it's somewhat situational, or like I feel like if they're aggressive, like that quad could help me.
Right.
I mean, there's more points, and they're just hitting with a force where, like, that penetration isn't an issue like it was in Texas.
Right.
In some places that I felt like they were less pressured to the big bait. But then, you know, watching fish completely just change the way they ate a glide bait that I used to stomp them out on before and just kind of, like, almost test it.
Yeah.
Dude, they're fascinating creatures, man.
Huh. Like, they learn.
They learn. The dumb ones get killed.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't make it.
Yeah. Well, let me blow everybody's mind, especially my swim bait guys. You guys are talking about trebles and quads and all that shit. I'm going to singles. Mm. That's right, freestyle hooks on my swim bait.
Did you say freestyle?
Yes. Single freestyle.
Australia's been doing that for years.
See that?
Yeah. Oh.
Herbie Hancock.
Don't talk about that too much. Oh, man. Single hook stingers are one of the probably biggest deals in Australian fishing, and something that I do a ton on a ton of different baits over here and have massive results on it, on techniques that you lose a lot of fish on, especially smallmouth, spin gear, on hard bodies. Australia's been doing that for probably 10 years, hand tying single hooks on braid, little leaders, and having them just float up on blades and any different type of lure you can think of. Australians have put singles on them, especially with fish that jump, and so it converts big time over here.
Wow. What are you doing it on here, Carl? Give us an example of some of the baits you're doing that on.
The biggest one is like a lipless. You know, if you have two singles on a lipless, you can roll it through hydrilla and just keep winding it, and it's just going to keep pulling through. You don't have to snap it or rip it. You can just slow wind it. It'll never grab that grass.
Wow.
And it'll have two singles just hanging back facing directly upwards. And when they bite it, you got two single hooks in them, no leverage, and it's on braid, so it just twists. There's nothing to grab like what a split ring does, where it gets to a certain point and then it starts to actually pull the hook out.
Yeah.
The singles never do that. And, you know, I've talked to Brandon a bit. I don't know if I want to mention it, but like a spy bait is that's the hook on that type of bait. And in Australia, like, they will not throw like a blade, you know, when you're ripping like a blade. They won't throw it with a treble on it. It will have hand-tied braid singles every time.
Wow. Very cool. And a spy bait, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
Brian,
I think we were supposed to just, like, let that glide kind of glaze over.
Let's talk about it later.
Yeah, let's pretend he didn't say it.
All right, we'll pretend.
You should have seen us this year in the camper, like, hand-tying all these little single hooks and stuff.
Yeah.
And Carl sitting in there.
Brandon and I went too far, and we had... We had fluff hanging off singles, and the spy bait didn't even look like a spy bait anymore.
We had marabou, hand tied marabou hair singles, all colored
to
match the base.
Have minds of your own.
I love it.
That's awesome. All right, we got a good one. Riz patched through a question from Kevin Koo, K-U-E. And this is a good one for Brandon and Carl to chime in on, which is, Oliver, will you continue to make content when Fishing the Bass opens? And will you run cameras during the entire day like these guys do, Fishing the Elites?
Damn Skippy.
Ooh.
So big shout out to the partners that are helping me realize that dream. There's so many of them, but like some of the key ones are Toyota, Yeti, Yakima Racks, Mustang, Black Rifle Coffee, and C-Deck. So many people that are helping me put together the resources to have the crew to capture this crazy journey I'm about to be on. So there's going to be multiple series that we're going to be working on, and all hopefully higher production pieces that are worthy of the experience.
Yeah.
That's like dope. This is a special opportunity for myself, but you know, for someone that might not be able to make that decision, that has aspirations to do either the tournament side of things or me continuing to try and bang the biggest fish I can, insert X species.
Yeah.
I want to document and capture that experience and show people, like, man, if I can take this as far as I have, like, anybody has it within their means.
Yeah.
You just got to go get it, man. But there's a lot coming.
Yeah, a lot coming. I want to know from Brandon and Carl, you guys are the best at documenting your day on the water, you know, with different action cams and GoPros and stuff. I got to be honest with you, and Brian has harassed me about this for a lot of years.
I cite Brandon all the time.
I know.
Brandon,
I know, and I call bullshit on it. Listen to me. In big tournaments, I don't know the best way to describe it. Like, I have like a bad feeling when that camera's on. Like, sometimes I don't want it running because I feel like it's affecting my day. You know, like, I don't know if it's – I wouldn't even call it like bad luck, but I just – I don't know. I almost want to be so focused on my tournament fishing that the camera sort of becomes a hindrance. I don't see it with you guys because, Brandon, shit, I see you clicking it as you're fighting a smallmouth. And I'm like, what in the fuck's
he
doing?
No kidding.
But
it's because when the camera's on, you start acting up.
That's not true. Carl,
always acting up.
You start acting up.
Carl, do you have any of these phobias or problems when you're running a camera, or it's just natural for you to put that thing on?
It feels pretty natural to me. I know exactly where you're coming from those feelings that you get. They are there. I'm sure they're there for everyone. But, you know, for me, my whole life, I've wanted to show people what I'm doing and show people how cool fishing is and what I'm experiencing because, you know, we're at that age and growing up and we've all been through it where fishing wasn't cool and most people didn't understand it. So I want to bring across those experiences and what I'm doing. So that's why I tried to do live and for me, I thought I was going to lose touch with Australia. That was my biggest fear. I had 10 years from 15 years old to when I was 26. I'd fished every tournament like my life depended on it because everyone thought I was going to fail. I could never be a fisherman. I was never going to make it. So, like, if I had a bad tournament, it felt like I was dying. Like, that was my whole life. Like, I'd let myself down. And so that's the sort of intensity I was always fishing with. And so when I'd made it in Australia, I'd done everything I'd ever done and wanted to do when I moved here, I thought I was going to lose all of that. I thought, man, I did 10 years in Australia. I built all of this and then I'm just moving countries and I'm going to lose all of that. And so social media and cameras and filming and GoPros and capturing all of this has been the best thing that has ever happened for me because otherwise Australia would have no idea what I'm doing over here or anything that it's about. Yeah. So I see it as a positive and I try not – I used to be superstitious and I saw it being superstitious as being a huge negative because in a tournament I'd be like, never get the net out or don't fill the live wells up and before you caught a fish.
Yeah.
And then I realized that was affecting me negatively if it just happened to happen. Like if I didn't have my lucky hat or I wasn't wearing the jersey from the day before when I caught him, that was a negative effect. And so I was like, I'm letting go of all of that. That's just, that is in your head and it's crap. Just fish, you know how to do it.
Yeah.
And since I did that, now cameras running, chesty as much as you can get and see it all of it as only as a positive. That's it.
Yes, that's awesome. And Brandon, I know you got a library. It's unbelievable. I can't wait, you know, 10, 20 years down the road, I can't wait to see what you do with this immense amount of footage. It's unbelievable. But what else do you do with the footage? We see it on Facebook. We see it on YouTube. We see it on your post. But do you actually use it for your own benefit? Do you go back and review? Do you try to learn from it? What are some of the things you're doing with it?
Yeah. So there's, one thing is that it helps supplement sponsorship stuff, right? Like, yeah, we have this massive library where if a sponsor comes and says, hey, do you have any footage of this or that?
Yeah.
Odds are we probably have it somewhere.
Right.
The other thing that I didn't expect to happen when I started this, or when I had the idea of filming with a third person, because I had already been filming with a GoPro, but I knew that there was a whole different perspective that I wanted to be able to capture that I couldn't do myself in the moment. And throughout that process, I learned a lot about like different things, like being able to look back and say, okay, why did I lose that fish?
Right.
And could I go back and watch it in 120 frames a second, mm-hmm, and slow it down and say, okay, what was it? A gear malfunction? Was it a hook set angle? Was, you know, was my body turned wrong? Were my hips turned the wrong direction? And I've surprisingly learned an incredible amount of stuff from that. You know, a lot of just like things that, you know, people don't think about or talk about, like body positioning when you're making that cast, or and how much that would actually affect the hook penetration that I would get just based on how my body was turned. And the other thing that's it's helped me out with is because I talked to the camera, it allows me to talk out loud and process that information. Like you were talking about earlier, and we were talking to Oliver about it, of like, if you think it, then just go do it. And when you have a camera there and you're talking about it and you're like, man, I should go do this. Yeah. Man, I should go do this.
Yeah.
It's like writing something down. Like when you actually say it, it holds a lot more clout. And I feel like it allows me to think with more of an open mind of when I actually speak it out loud and say, man, I should go do this.
Self-accountable.
Odds are I go and I do that more often. Yeah. And it's crazy how much that's helped me. And it, like for me, it's a positive because it gives me an outlet to talk to, and I feed off of that energy. And it's like, I love having people on the water watching me.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of guys that hate it.
Yeah.
And yes, there are times where you have, you know, the bad apple guy that's just disrespectful. But 9 times out of 10, like having people on the water and cheering you on, to me just compounds and builds that snowball effect. And so to film, it's not easy. It's not for everybody. It's super difficult. And you have to just learn how to manage it, right? So knowing now that you're going to have someone film Oliver, that's another key that I'll give you, or another tip, is just learning how to manage that and communicate that with everybody, right? Of like making sure that you allow them to get the shots, but don't allow them to hinder your ability to compete. It's, I mean, you don't want to get in a position where it's like, oh man, this would be an awesome shot. And a lot of times they don't know, and they run right over the top of where you want to go.
No, I've had those
just tell them like, hey, just stay off.
Yeah, I've had those battles already in just some of the high production, you know, high pressure projects I've been a part of. It's a very similar scenario where like, okay, I just hooked this muskie on this, you know, crazy shoot where I'm not even probably going to catch one. I can make it look really cool by trying to transition to this side on the camera side, or I can just put this thing in the net and we'll call it good from there. And there's so much mental discipline there, and watching these guys like conquering that, like you're saying, when it's a hindrance to so many, like honestly, I've been thankful. It's been such a pain in the ass to capture what we do. Otherwise everybody would do it.
Right.
And these guys are reaping the benefits of the hard work. And like, those are the things that people don't see.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of that early storytelling from those guys, there was no camera guy.
Right.
It was them and a GoPro or action camera.
Yeah.
And you make do with what you have, and you got to be able to hyper-focus on top of that potential added distraction.
Yeah.
So, man, kudos to you guys for mastering that. And it's crazy because it's such a part of what I do for so long. Like, there's no excuse.
Right.
So when I hear guys on that level, especially making excuses, like, oh, I can't do it because I got to focus on the tournament stuff. Like, man, we all got to focus on catching the fish no matter what the context is.
Yeah. Can you guys tell Pete Klusik what a camera is?
Well,
Oh, poor Pete.
He's looking at it.
I'm on social media now for 4 hours straight, thanks to you, Mike.
I just bumped your numbers up.
Mike, this is important. Like, I want to capture this stuff too, and I do a lot of training and I do a lot of teaching, and I fish the same bodies of water, but I'm going to fish, you know, I fish tournaments. I'm going to continue to do it. What about giving up the goods? You're practicing, you're live, and you're fishing in front of the pink boathouse, and there's a grass bed, and you catch, you know, a couple big bites. How do you manage not giving up the goods to the competition?
Huh.
That's a confidence thing for me. And it goes to the same principles of like all of the goods that we give up in Bass University. People still have to go and apply that information. And just because somebody sees something in the background doesn't necessarily mean they know how to approach it. They may not know exactly what the right technique is. You know, because a lot of times someone may see me fishing out in front of a dock and it looks like I'm fishing the dock, but I'm actually staring at my Mega 360 cast in the other direction and fishing something out off the bank. And so there's a lot of info that you see, but it doesn't always tell the entire picture, and the approach and the timing that guys have can be off, and it may not work. Mm-hmm. And I just always tell myself that today is not going to be the same as tomorrow, and today is not the same as yesterday. And it's just like always having that open mind and being able to change. And I feel like if a guy is watching my videos to figure out where I caught him last time, I'm already that much further ahead in my thinking.
Yeah, that was going to be my point. I think that if someone is looking at your stuff for your spot and then to go there to catch them, they've already lost.
Losers. Don't be
when
guy.
You catch them, it's usually like you're winding this bait and then you're feeling the grass and you're seeing that edge on 360 and you're killing it off the edge of that grass and letting it fall, and then you're making a pop at the end and burning it and then getting a bite. Like, it's not like they just roll up and they're going to start catching them. It's just, there's usually so much into that technique, and it happens to all of us. Brandon and I work together, and I work with Gussie, and Brandon can say I'm catching him on a DT10, and I'm like, he can tell me everything, but he knows the little tiny details of what that, and if I don't understand it or if I'm not in the boat with him right then and there, it's nearly impossible to figure out. That's why, like, you've just always got to find your own fish.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah, I hear you and I agree with that, but what I worry about is the complications of drawing people into the area that they may not be able to catch them, but they can inhibit you from being able to fish there.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a problem. It's definitely a problem. You've got a point. It's a massive problem in the whole sport, you know, the information thing and just the way it all happens. Like, any of us could win at any time if it wasn't for outside from spectators to just fishermen. It's a tough sport, but I think confidence is where a lot of it comes from, and knowing the place and being able to move around. But that side of things is one of the toughest things in our entire sport, I think, is just how big of an influence one other human can have on your entire career, on your tournament, on your livelihood. I explain, like, they're playing golf. Golfers play on public courses. That's that anyone can play there. But they shut it off for them. But imagine if two guys laid up and they're both on the green, but then a spectator just came in and just teed off one guy's ball clean off the green and left the other guys. And they're like, sorry, dude. Like, tough. And then you've just got to wear it on the chin. That's what we do and anglers do every single tournament we go to. That happens.
Yeah.
And you just got to fish enough of them to where it ends up on your side and they leave your stuff alone, or you lay up, or you find the right things where your stuff gets left alone and you get to play out how you want to play it.
Yeah.
I'm going to put this back on people, man. And there's no better correction than when it comes from the community.
Yes.
So if you see people acting like a Richard, call them out on it and be like, yo, that's not cool, man.
Yeah. It's about a culture in an area, too. And I think some areas just don't have that culture. I know when the elites came to the Delaware, we know how the Delaware fishes. It fishes small. There's not a lot of spots. Dude, we hustled them guys out of there, gave them a hard time, harassed them.
Right.
Tell them Richard's out.
Yeah, dude.
Because those people
are you freaking kidding me, dude? The Delaware sucks. Why you got to fish here today? And it wasn't even Mike. It was John Cruz was trying to fish a dock, and some idiots were trying to fish it. Dude, darn the elites.
For real.
Get out of here.
Yeah, because the motivation of fishing it was in their head.
Yeah.
They wanted to be out there. They wanted to catch more fish than
It's because they the got pros. Little tiny ones.
Yeah.
Little tiny.
That tells a lot of someone, man.
Yeah.
Their character, lack of it. Like, don't be that dude.
Yeah, don't have a small penis.
Yeah.
Don't be Richard. Please, if you're watching, don't be Richard.
Or Karen. Just,
yeah, give some people some respect, you know. It's all good, dude.
Give them some respect.
I
want to wrap this up. I know we're super over, but here's what I want to say right now. I got three amazing anglers on the panel right now. Brandon.
Thank you.
Carl. Awesome luck. I wish you tremendous success in the elites in 2021. Oliver, wish you tremendous success in the 2021 Opens. Dude, I hope you guys, you know, go for it, win tournaments, live your dreams. I can't wait to watch it unfold. It's going to be awesome. And thank you guys for joining us in the panel and staying so late with us. That was awesome. You made this show a treat tonight for us, man. Thank you guys.
Appreciate you having me. I'm excited to see what you're going to do in 21.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Throw it at him, Brandon.
Oh, well, mystery man over there. I mean.
All right. Well, let's.
Thank you.
Well, let me go ahead and make it.
Thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you.
And
give the man his roses, man.
Thank you for everything you've done, because I don't know what direction you're going. So
thank you,
hats
Brandon.
Off to you for everything that you've done
Brandon.
In the sport.
I appreciate that.
And I'm excited to see what is next, right? More time with Vegas, the Hammer, and, you know, whatever it may be, I'm excited to see it because I know it'll be good things.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. It means a lot, and definitely I'm gonna miss being in the mix, but I'm going to be watching you guys every week, and I'm going to make an announcement right now. If you're one of the lucky ones still watching all these hours in, we're almost over 4 hours. I'm here to tell you that for the first time, I'm going to announce that on next week's Ike Live show, I will make the announcement. So you'll have to tune in to next week's show.
Got him.
Got me.
I was telling Oliver about how that time that you had your MLF announcement, we went 5 hours.
5 hours, kept everybody on.
Oh, yeah.
And then didn't announce it. And then we staged the feed cutting out.
Oh, yeah.
Put the static on. And
I thought it was brilliant. We did it. We nailed it. The timing was perfect. I jumped out of the producer's booth. Mike threw his headset off. We like flew and chest bumped and hugged.
We were happy.
We were so happy. It was just because
it was shots. It was great.
5 hours. We had Duckett on. We had Bill Taylor and who do we have from Bass?
Chase. Do we have Chase? Was it Chase?
No.
Bruce? Y'all are ridiculous, man.
Shit, I forget.
I can't remember either.
But it was like an epic long show and then we ended it like that. Thought it was amazing. And then like 40 minutes later, started reading the comments.
Hate mail for weeks.
Oh, God, they hated it.
It was great.
But I still loved it.
Yeah, I still loved it, too. I think it was the best show ever.
I do, too.
Yeah. Brandon, Carl, thank you guys for joining us tonight.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks.
You're welcome.
On.
We'll see you.
Good luck this year,
guys. See you, guys. See ya.
Have a good night.
Later.
Dude, what a show.
Thanks, man.
What a show. Mm. This was a good one.
Yeah, let me give us a few things here.
All right.
Because we got to get we got to do an MTB unboxing.
Yes.
We've got to give away our Facebook like and share.
Yep.
Are we fishing tomorrow?
Are we gonna film tomorrow? Oliver. Or are we gonna film on Wednesday?
I said Wednesday. I said Sunday. I said Saturday. Right. I said Monday.
You shut the hell up. Right. We'll be here forever. Right. Are we fishing tomorrow? Mike, you out?
I'm out. I'm not fishing tomorrow.
Do you
want
to fish tomorrow?
Break.
Man, I'm down to do all of it.
We got to be there at 7.
Hold on.
Oh, Winter League. Are you talking about the Winter League?
On Sunset.
Oh, you should fish it.
I know
you
should.
I'm in. Mike's in.
He ain't going to go.
I'm pulling that card.
I am going to open this.
Right, we'll talk about it.
Up, though. Okay. I know you've waited for it all show. You waited over 4 hours for this segment. This is one of your favorite parts of the show. I know it is. It's mine for sure. And this is the only live podcast to do a live unboxing of MTB. And
four
we're going to do it today here with the Pro Box. You know the rules. I'm going to grab one item out of here. Oliver, I'm going to pass to you. We're going to pass it over to Brian and Carpenter. Pete's got his own box in front of him. And we're going to pick out one item to just review. Just say, hey, this is cool, or, you know, this is unusual or whatever. And all right, here you go. I'm going to pick mine. Okay, hand it to Oliver. Let me start describing mine while Oliver's picking his. All right, Pete, look at this. This is no joke right here. I actually think this is pretty cool and genius. This is a bait by Bagley's. Bagley's is an old lure company. They're still making balsa baits. This is like I would call it a thinner prop style bait. I could see this working in scenarios where you have a little chop on the water. I could see it working when you need to have a smaller profile. You know, I use Rapala stuff, but I could see this working. So smaller prop bait than you would normally throw, but in certain situations that might work for you. So that's a cool bait. That's a cool bait. I like that
Roppy.
One. Oliver, what do you got?
Y'all ready for this?
Ready for this?
You know, in my long career of fishing, I've figured out at least one thing. I need one of these.
A hook!
To accomplish my dreams.
Look at that.
There's a
hook.
We've got
in
a 3-aught offset worm hook. And this is actually one of my favorite hook styles of all time. I grew up as a Texas rig fisherman, 6- and 7-inch hand-poured California plastics.
Yeah.
3/16 ounce lead bullet weight, because I usually couldn't afford the brass. It was too expensive. And a 3-aught worm hook, just like this.
Yeah. I tell you what.
Bring back the Texas rig.
The good thing about 3-aught, and Pete, agree with me or disagree with me on this. If you're going to pick one worm hook size to try to do it all, that's a pretty good one, right? 3-aught?
Really? It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. That can fit the ribbon tails and the little baits. You can make it work on a little bait. It's good. You're right. Good all around size.
Yeah. Brian Carpenter, you want to pick one out of here? What do you got, Pete? Let's do yours, and then we'll have Brian Carpenter.
All right. I got something I haven't seen before.
Okay.
It looks like a straight tail kind of bait. Like a stick bait of some kind. Relatively new to fishing, I think. it's a Weston stick bait. Got ribs, unique edges to it. This is my kind of bait.
By Weston.
Weston.
Huh. Interesting.
There it is.
How about
black.
That?
The only argument I have is it's got blue fleck in it.
Are you not a fan of blue fleck?
It should be straight black.
Straight black. Oh, that's right.
You know.
Yeah, no fleck. Oh, naturel. All right, Brian DeCarpenter. Last but not least, what do you got in the MTB Pro Box this month? Give me something good. What do you got?
Here we go.
Let's see.
Snank. It's a, where are we at? Paddletail. Paddletail worm. It's got the little cut in it.
Oh, a speed worm.
Speed worm. Speed worm by Buddha Bait Company.
Cool.
Dope little speed worm. Mike, you might have won a Bassmaster Classic trophy.
I may have won a classic with a speed worm or a swim worm. Yeah.
You may have.
I may have.
Yep.
It's a good possibility.
So this is what we were using on the top before frogs.
Yeah, there you have it. Before all that. Another great example of MTB box puts in your hands a lot of stuff that you might not normally get, showing you new techniques, new products. There you have it. Let's end this amazing show with our like and share giveaway. Riz, I know we had people all night on Facebook liking and sharing the feed, and tonight's is better than the Ike Live gift bag.
I think we're going to throw that on top of all the other stuff.
Are we really?
Because we couldn't think of anything else the
entire
time.
Okay.
four hours.
Four hours in.
We're at our limit.
Listen, if you hung with us and you were nice enough to like and share the feed.
Rich, pick two.
Pick two. Riz, if you pick two, we're going to give one. We're going to give Oliver's gracious enough to have a Big Bass Dreams package. Including,
and a swim bag.
Yeah, including an amazing $60 what's the name of the swim bag?
He's going to let you hang.
I can't
Devastating.
Dang, that's a good name.
Devastating Groundbreakers?
Devastating Ground Controllers. And,
<There it is. laughs>
and for the second winner, you're going to win the traditional Ike Live gift bag coming in at over 20 pounds, loaded with Ike Live sponsored products. Riz, what do we got?
So for the first winner for the Big Bash Dreams package, the winner is Trevor Tucker. Congratulations.
All right, Trevor Tucker.
Trevor Tucker.
Yo, shout out to Trevor Tucker. Fun fact, he owns my old Dream Machine.
Really?
Wait, what?
Yay!
TJ!
Wow!
Hey, man, he's the new captain of the old Ranger Dream
Comes
Machine.
Full circle
how
again.
About that? How about
Classic.
That?
I had nothing to do with that, I'm saying.
Wow. No, that's all Riz.
Rich didn't know that either.
Wow. All right, Riz, for the Ike Live gift bag.
The Ike Live gift bag winner is Frank Spangenberg. Let me guess, this guy owns your old cat or something. What's going on here?
No, I hate that thing.
Frank Spangenberg! No, I don't know Frank. But Frank, congratulations.
Congrats, man.
Oh, winning the Ike Live gift bag. Good job. What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, a couple more things. Did you know where our beloved Eric is these days?
No, Barstool.
He moved to Florida.
He moved to Florida?
On a Tuesday night. Him and Johnny just got in their car and started driving on a whim.
Wow.
They got there, and after about a day and a half, they're like, we ain't going back.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So good to live like that.
Yep.
Enjoy Florida.
They now live in Florida.
But the weather's so beautiful up here.
I know. I don't know. They really want to leave one bite for 7-hour lakes?
I told them, dude, do not come back. Do not come back, Eric. You are home.
Don't even look in the rearview mirror.
You're home, buddy.
Go.
Good
for them.
Oh, guess what Oliver had last night? Miles Stromboli.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I didn't even know what that was.
Wow. Yeah.
What
That's
rock
awesome.
Did I live under?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
That's good.
Practice making them.
I like it.
That's all I got.
I like it. I want to thank everybody for this show. This show was really special. Like, I'm honest. I'm not just saying it.
Brian Dude, it was a good one. It was a really, really good one.
Instantly gone to my top 10 of favorite shows ever.
Yeah, higher than
I'm
that.
Telling you. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and watching. I want to thank everybody involved. Rizzo on IMs, Pete Glusick for hanging in all 4 hours. Great insight tonight. Brian DeCarpenter, thank you, dude.
Amazing job.
Thank you for the surprise guest. Clint for hanging in there with us all show. Also want to thank our mystery guests, Carl Jochumson, Brandon Polinick, and Mustache Man Seth Fighter. Great mystery guests, Brian Carpenter.
Yeah, Mike Pilot.
Mike Pilot for tuning in.
VFX
Wraps. Please check them out if you want to get something wrapped.
Yep.
Last but not least, dude, I want to thank you for coming this week.
Yes.
Hey, man, mad respect, bro. Thank you.
It was a big dream for me to have you here.
Dude, that's crazy to hear that from you, man. This is a very humbling experience.
Yeah, well,
it's crazy.
It was our pleasure. So thanks you for hanging with us.
For sure.
Hope everybody had a good time. We'll see you. Yes?
Have you released the AFCO commercial, the full one, the long one?
It's been released on social. Yeah. Yeah, you want
to
play it on that?
Do you want to roll out to that?
Yeah, if you can find it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or... All right, give me 1 second. Keep congratulating each other for
a
minute.
let's sing an old fishing song. Pete, pick one.
I don't have a song.
No, one of the old Roland or Jimmy songs or Bill Dance or
Bill Dance.
Word on the street is there some Ike Nelly songs out there.
I'm a going fishing too. That's your old life. Why it's going to catch more fish than you.
There it goes.
Welcome to Bill Dan's Outdoor.
You want me to keep going?
America's most popular and longest running.
Hey, that's the Fish and Blues, show. Man. It's the Fish and Blues song.
Yeah. You know it?
Well, that's all I know.
That's it.
All right. Well, thank everybody for tuning in. We'll see you next time on iCloud. Good night.